Welcome to the Peace Officer Talk Show today. We have had panels. We've had panels as many as seven or eight people on this show. I can remember days when we were doing this show, particularly out on Roosevelt Avenue. We couldn't get in. We had to add in extra seats and extra microphones just to be able to get all of the guys in on the show. Well, we've got a situation. We try to have the sheriff. We try to have the police chief. And we try to have the representative of the Iowa State Patrol, that's Jason Marlowe. The police chief is at a special meeting, and he's in conflict today, and both of his majors, those would be the assistant chiefs, so to speak, those gentlemen are both unavailable as well. And we've got Mike Johnstone is not available. We do have Kevin Glendenning, and he's Sergeant Kevin Glendenning. Are you the chief deputy? Is that correct? That is not correct?
No, the chief deputy is Brett Grimshaw.
But you are a sergeant, and so do you have an additional title in addition to that, or what? Right hand man, or what do you call it? I don't know.
No additional title necessarily. I'm the sergeant of our patrol operations, and I also manage our budget, our training and future resources.
Okay, so and we were talking about that. One of the things is, and we're going to talk about a number of things today, but I think we're finding out a little bit how the sheriff's office works and how it's changed. We're talking about how it's changed over the years. I was mentioning, you were talking about dates. One of the things going back to 99, that was Columbine and school shootings and the spate of shootings, school shootings that have gone on since then. That's been one thing. Over the last 3 to 4 years, though, has been a remarkable increase in what they call the war on police, and we've had police officers ambushed, sitting in their cars.
Yes, we have,
and it's the kind of thing. I don't know, and we have these riots. I'm not sure who's behind the riots. Some of it is, you can talk about the situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You can talk about the situation in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But it's like we have law enforcement is in the target zone right now. And I don't know if you had the magic power, what would you do to make things so that we would not have that situation anymore?
Well, I think one of the important things we can do is, have just a strong line of communication with our public, with our community groups, with our community leaders, and do that beforehand. But sit down and talk with them, to listen to them and understand their perspectives, what they want to see in law enforcement, make the community goals, consistent with our goals for law enforcement, with our sheriff's office goals, with the police department goals.
Now, the community policing is one of the things that has been used. We've used that term a lot, and that's been one of the bicycle patrols, in the city. I know, officers on the streets, officers available and on the street and getting to be known within in certain neighborhoods. And neighborhood policing is the other thing we've talked about. But how does that work, in major cities? It does seem that we're in a much quieter area here than in those major cities. We're not having the riots. We're not having these sorts of things going on. But would you feel like police or sheriffs or law enforcement is under attack here?
No, I really don't. I don't feel under attack here. I feel like we have a really strong relationship with our community. We can certainly continue to build on that. We want We want our community to know that we're here to listen. And if they have a problem, if they have a concern, that's also a concern for us. And what I would encourage is they come down to the sheriff's office and speak with us. They come to the police department and speak with those leaders. And I know that they will sit down and listen. And a lot of times our concerns, they're the same. And we're looking for answers. We're looking for ideas. And we want to have those relationships. And before these major incidents start that might cause the protests, and I'm not speaking of the peaceful protests, but more the other the vandalism, the looting, the rioting. Before those major incidents start or an issue arises, we need to have a strong line of communication. People we can reach out to and speak with, people we can we've already built that relationship of trust where they know that we're on the same team. We're willing to sit down and talk with them, and we don't want these negative actions. We don't want the negative images of our community. I think we have the same goals, and sitting down and seeing it from others' perspectives is very helpful, especially before the incident occurs.
So what is happening in major cities? What is, in your opinion, what is going on here? What is a lot of people have speculated that there is an undercurrent, that we have peaceful sometimes we take peaceful protesters. And then we add into that mix people that are not peaceful, they're joining in on an event, but some might be they may be just prone to more violence than others or angrier than others. And then we have potentially a criminal element that's also at the undercore of in addition to that. Is that what it is, in your opinion, or what is going on? Why are these things turning the way they are?
As we've seen, I think we've seen these leaders of these protests with really good intentions. And we've had some peaceful protesting in our community that's gone very well. And I think it opens up lines of communication. It gives us an opportunity to hear from different perspectives, which is really important. But I think some of these protests that have gone astray, that have turned violent, that have turned to riots, I really think that there's a very small element of people out there that have bad intentions that show up at these, and their only intention is to wreak havoc, to be violent, to steal, to loot. That doesn't speak for the overwhelming majority of the folks there, but unfortunately, that can be contagious amongst others that might be there, and those actions can cause some others to become violent, and it becomes a very dangerous situation.
It's also a situation we have where we have how you respond, and it seems that these areas where we've had federal troops come in to respond to it, it has exacerbated the issue as much as anything else, or amplified it. I don't know if that's true or not. What's your do you have any feeling on that?
So I don't know if that's true or not either. I think there's a certain responsibility that we have to protect our citizens, to protect people's personal property, their businesses. We can't sit aside while vandalism is done, by stealing is done. We can't just stop and watch that happen. If we have the resources to stop those things, we have an obligation to protect them. If that's heightened the issue, I can't speak to that or not. I would assume that just their presence might anger some.
Now, we were talking before we went on about the fact that it is, you know, the standards, particularly in some of these major cities that have a need, they have a need for a certain number of officers, and they're facing a lot of the same issues in a larger degree than you're facing right here, and that is the number of qualified candidates. The number of qualified candidates is nowhere near. How long have you been in law enforcement?
20 years.
20 years. How many, when you were in the civil service exam, or when you were trying to be or applying to be a law enforcement officer, How many people were you competing with? Any idea?
So I remember that there was over 120 applicants showed up to test that day, and that was just the ones that showed up to test. And I can't speak for those times, but currently we see about half to two-thirds of the applicants that show up, or the applicants that we get, actually show up to test on test day. For whatever reason, a certain percentage of those don't show up.
But we're seeing dramatically low numbers of people that are applying.
Yeah, and we're at about 10% of those numbers, maybe 10 to 20% of those numbers showing up for the positions.
And why is that? Why is it?
So I think some of those issues are what we've talked about already, is the image of law enforcement, the controversy, the dangers, and also the hiring requirements. We have very high, strict hiring requirements based on physical ability, mental health, and moral health. In other words, you can't have things in your background that would disqualify you, issues of moral turpitude that would disqualify you from being a deputy or an officer. You have to be physically fit and you have to be mentally fit. And we have these very strict hiring requirements, and a lot of times we require college or it's expected to get that position. And there's other opportunities out there that maybe aren't so in that person's mind dangerous looked at as possibly being negative, that they pursue other career goals.
Are you able to find qualified applicants right now? Enough qualified applicants right now?
We are. And as we sit here, we have an open application. We are taking applications right now for an open position in our office. We just opened that up a few days ago, and I anticipate to get several applicants. We typically get between about 10 and 20 for a position. And one thing that's happened with that is we still get good quality applicants. We get a lot less candidates to look at. But I'd say the overall applicants are still really good.
Okay.
We've been able to hire some great deputies to work in our community. I'd say the same about our other local law enforcement agencies. Some really good officers that care, and they're finding good applicants.
Well, you've got a lot of officers that have been around a long time, and what I'm getting at is that the longer you've got a number of officers, you know, attrition is going to be a natural thing. I mean, once you have good officers that have been around 15, 20 years, some more than that, 25 years, and they are retiring. And there's going to be more of them retiring, filling those positions. That's going to become more difficult, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. I've had personal conversations with deputies, with command staff in our office who've talked about maybe their timeline for retirement and what they're thinking. And I've expressed my concern, are we going to be able to replace you with the same quality of person? And I think we've been really successful with that to date. We've got some really good applicants, some really good up-and-coming law enforcement officers. But I do have those concerns of we've got some really great deputies and officers that have been around a long time, and are we going to be able to replace them? I remain optimistic that we're going to.
Okay, well, but we were talking also before we went on that in major cities where you have needs for more and more officers, and they're facing a similar situation of retirement, of attrition, and also having limited numbers of applicants. So it appears, would you say that that there are officers that are on the street in some of these cities that would not have been hired in the past?
I think I would certainly have those concerns, as they need to have certain numbers. They need to hire. They have to have a certain number of officers to be able to handle the call load. I would encourage somebody to listen to a scanner, to listen to the calls that come out on any given night in some of these areas or in our area.
Yeah.
And there is a huge call load, a lot of incidents that are occurring that require demand of a certain number of officers. So as these other entities are attempting to fill those positions, that would be a concern, is that those standards have been moved to be able to hire the number of officers that they have to have. That would be a concern for me.
And, well, it appears that that is a concern, and I think that's one of the issues. We also talked a little bit about what's going on right now. The last time you were here, I believe, and the last time we had peace officers here, I don't think you were here last month. But before that, we were talking about the fact that with the surge in violence, COVID has had a dramatic effect in terms of, keeping people inside, and hunkered down, and limitations, and quarantined. It's had an effect in terms of, I think, making people a little stir crazy. I don't know if that's exactly the right way to put it, but it seems that that's part of the deal as well. Is that right?
I think that's a good way to put it. And when these issues first came about, a lot of people were quarantining themselves. They were keeping themselves in their house. They were getting what I would call like cabin fever. They wanted to be out. They wanted to go out. And I do think that heightened some of the issues a little bit.
One of the issues we're facing right now is, as a lot of the country is going down, and where they're seeing those numbers continuing to go down in positivity, we seem to be seeing a situation, at least in some of these counties. We did see one in Des Moines County. We're up to 15.5 in the two-week positivity rate, and in college campuses right now, it's surging in the 20 to 25% rate right now in terms of positivity. That means we're going the wrong way.
We are. We're moving in the wrong direction,
and that's of concern, because you get people that you're trying to open up. You got schools back in session. You've got things that are going on. You got football scheduled to start in, at least in some of these places, college campuses, Iowa State schedule. They got a football game coming up next week, at least for now. But and you got some colleges that have pushed everything back until the spring or winter time or whatever. The reality is, we don't know when this thing's going to when it's going to end, do we?
No, I really don't. I don't envy our medical health professionals, our governor, our city leaders, even our college presidents. They're under enormous pressure to make these decisions, to make a determination: is it safe for them to come back? And I think they have people pushing them on the medical side of things, but also on the economic side of things.
You've got the Big Ten. The Big Ten. Iowa is expected to lose over $100 million by canceling the fall season. $100 million. You take $100 million here and $100 million there, pretty soon you got some real money. Schools like Ohio State are looking at $200 million in terms of loss.
And then you add into that local economies.
All the people everyone that's served by all of these businesses that are served by full packed houses of football stadiums. Yeah.
Landlords, businesses, they depend on student population. And I'm certainly not advocating for the students to have been brought back, but I'm just pointing out that those are what comes into play in this decision making is local communities depend on the student population. 30 to 40,000 students will come into those towns, and to a population of 100,000, they depend on those. And I don't envy the pressure that those decision makers are under to get that right.
It's a difficult trip. We're going to take a break for news. We've got Colin Letty. No, we don't have. We've got Kevin Glendenning of the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office, Sergeant Kevin Glendenning. We're talking law enforcement, and we're going to talk about some specific issues with what's going on right now and some issues to deal with. We'll talk about things in the fall. School zones, for one. How about buses, passing buses? We'll talk a little bit about that. Speeding, it's up. There's no doubt about that. We'll talk about that with Kevin and more. Phone lines are open, 754-1490. We would love to hear from you. And again, we'll be back after the news.
This is The Herd with Colin Cowherd.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to start for the Miami Dolphins. This is great news for Tua. This is a really, really bad year to start as a rookie quarterback. Miami now has a second-year head coach, a new offensive coordinator. They're rebuilding their O-line, and two of their wide receivers opted out.
Colin Cowherd.
Weekdays 11 to 2 on Fox Sports 104.5 and 1360.
Is a college education a distant dream you hold for a newborn child staring you in the face? Next to retirement planning, paying for your children's education could be the largest expense that your family will bear. A 529 college savings program is an option to help save for higher education. For more information on this flexible college savings program, contact the financial advisor team at Two Rivers Investment Services. They can help you plan today for tomorrow's college education expenses. Prior to investing in a 529 plan, investors should consider whether the investor's or designated beneficiary's home state offers any state tax or other benefits that are only available for investments in such state's qualified tuition program. Withdrawals used for qualified expenses are federally tax-free. Tax treatment at the state level may vary. Please consult with your tax advisor before investing. Securities and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, may lose value, not insured by any federal government agency, and not a bank deposit. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. LPL Financial and Two Rivers Investment Services are independent entities.
Mr. Clean. Most people know that Mr. Clean Magic Eraser removes crayon and scuff marks from walls, but did you know it even cleans tough kitchen and bathroom messes that are sometimes tough to tackle? Just wet, squeeze, and erase gray soap scum on your bathtub. Erase cloudy hard water spots in your shower. Erase burnt on stovetop messes. So for all your tough kitchen and bathroom messes, try Mr. Clean Magic Eraser.
Mr. Clean. If there was ever a place for everything, it has to be the Home Depot's Pack Store Save event. Now with exclusive HDX black and yellow tough totes in various sizes from as little as $4.98 each. Safely store everything from seasonal items to family keepsakes. At this price, these totes are well within reach. Go to HomeDepot.com/storage. All your storage solutions in one place. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Valid through September 7th while supplies last.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
News brought to you by Kelly O'Shea's Pub and Grill, featuring a full menu including seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, and appetizers, as well as nightly specials. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
And now the latest from the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. Great River Friends recently donated $18,550 to Great River Medical Center. According to a news release, the money will fund items to be used at the hospital and Great River Klein Center, a long-term and skilled nursing facility on the hospital's West Burlington campus. All projects are meant to enhance patient and elder experiences. Great River Friends supports Great River Medical Center with the gifts of time, talent, and treasure. For more information, please call Volunteer Services at 319-768-3340. Waco High School is limiting the number of spectators for their volleyball matchup against West Burlington due to gym size and COVID-19 precautions. The school will be giving each player 3 tickets to distribute to whomever they wish to attend the game on Tuesday, September 8th. Admission price, $5 per adults or students, or pass will still be required to enter the game along with the admission ticket. West Burlington fans will be seated on the south side of the gym and Waco fans on the north side. Masks are not required, but highly recommended by the school. Along with the tickets, 40 Waco students will be allowed in the student section, with 12th graders having first chance, then 11th, and so on through 7th graders. Students in elementary must enter and be seated with parents. The school says the game will be available to watch via live stream on the Waco Warrior Live YouTube channel for those who do not have an admission ticket from a player or coach. All 3 matches, fresh, soft, JV, and varsity, will be live streamed. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst is suggesting government statistics on coronavirus infections and deaths have been inflated. Ernst, who is facing an unexpectedly tough re-election fight, is echoing a discredited conspiracy theory. Ernst made the comment after a man at a campaign stop in Waterloo said he believes the number of cases and deaths are being exaggerated. Experts refute that, and some data suggest the toll is higher than the official count. Ernst said she, too, is, quote, so skeptical of the official numbers. In a statement later Wednesday, she referred to the government-reported deaths toll as fact. From the KBOR newsroom, I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. It would have been a record high in any other year, but new unemployment claims are the fewest since the start of the coronavirus shutdowns in March.
There were 881,000 new claims for unemployment benefits last week. Continuing claims, the number of those still receiving benefits declined to 13.2 million.
Fox's Ginny Casola. The trade deficit in July, $63.6 billion. It's the most in 12 years, with imports rising a record amount. Joe Biden will be in Kenosha, Wisconsin today to talk about a police shooting and the violence that followed.
We're told he'll meet with the family of Jacob Blake, with law enforcement and members of the community.
What we want to do is we got to heal. We got to put things together, bring people together.
His visit today, also 2 days after President Trump's firsthand look in Kenosha at widespread damage from last week's violent protests.
Fox's Jeff Manasso, America's listening to Fox News.
The weather outside is beautiful, and that means it's patio season. It's time for sun, fun, and exceptional food and drinks, only at Kelly O'Shea's. Dine in for fresh summer delights, or use their carryout and curbside pickup options, available on Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays, to keep you warm and happy during the day's end. Check out their menu at Kelly O'Shea's Pub's Facebook page to see what's to offer. Not your average pub, not the average way. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Looking for sunny and breezy today with a high of 85 degrees. We'll see a southwest wind at 10 to 15 becoming northwest, gusting to 25 this afternoon. Clear tonight. Look for a low down to 50. Sunny Friday with a high of 83. Clear Friday night. Look for a low down to 60. Saturday should be sunny. A high up to 87. Partly sunny Sunday, 88. And partly sunny Monday, Labor Day high of 84 degrees. Right now, we've got a sunny sky, and it is 72 degrees.
I'm Peter Schachnow, CNBC. Stocks are opening mostly lower this morning, although sentiment did improve after the government issued its jobless claims report. First time claims for jobless benefits came in at 881,000, fewer than economists had been predicting. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ had ended yesterday's session at record highs. The Dow at a better-than-six-month high. Costco says sales at stores open at least a year rose a better-than-expected 13.2% in August, with e-commerce sales more than doubling. PVH shares are on the rise after the maker of Tommy Hilfiger and Calvin Klein apparel reported better-than-expected profit on strong demand for casual clothing. And Tesla shares are falling this morning after the automaker's largest shareholder, Bailey Gifford, cut its stake to under 5% from 6.3%. The investment firm says its view of Tesla hasn't changed, but with the run-up in its stock price, it represented too large a portion of Bailey Gifford's portfolio. Peter Schachnow, CNBC.
Time for owners. What I'm about to share may save you thousands of dollars. I'm Gordon Newton, president of the Newton Group and author of The Consumer's Guide to Timeshare Exit. In the last 15 years, I've heard everything imaginable from exit companies trying to get you to hire them. I've heard them advertise a money-back guarantee. The truth is, those guarantees fall flat time and time again as bad exit companies file for bankruptcy and take your money with them. I've heard them try to earn your trust, claiming they pioneered timeshare cancellation in 2008. The ugly truth is, that's not possible. Newton Group has been leading the exit industry long before that. I've even heard exit companies pay celebrity endorsers to convince you they're experts. The truth is, the experts at Newton Group wrote The Consumer's Guide to Timeshare Exit. Every year, timeshare owners lose millions of dollars by hiring the wrong exit company. If you want out of your timeshare, call Newton Group at 800-800-1764 for your free no-obligation consultation and free copy of the guide. That's 800-800-1764 or newtongroup.com.
At Standard of Beaverdale, they're trying to think ahead and stay on top of what the next need will be. If you've tried to buy toilet paper, a freezer, swimming pool, or canning supplies this year, you understand the frustration of getting to the store to find out they're all sold out. Stay ahead of the curve on this one and come out to Standard for their 12 days of Christmas sale. That's right, Christmas. This is a pre-season preview of a great selection of Christmas trees. Stop out to Standard to find trees of every shape and size, from small tabletop trees to 7.5-foot towering trees. You'll find pre-lit trees and unlighted trees, green trees, and snow-flocked white trees, all at a huge discount. Buy a 4.5-foot pine tree pre-lit with clear lights, regularly $72.99 for just $19.99. Or select a 7.5-foot snowy pine pre-lit with clear lights, regularly $200, yours just $74.99. Christmas will be here before you know it. Buy your tree early and save big at Standard of Beaverdale, now through September 5th.
Start your day with KBUR.
The morning news. The weather.
Information you need to start your day.
Instant, up to date.
News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. And online at KBUR.com.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad
And it is Sergeant Kevin Glendening of the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office. He is the sole law enforcement officer joining us today. He said, I'm on the hot seat. Well, not really. We've just been having a conversation about what's been going on nationwide and also locally. But we're going to talk specifically. One of the things I did notice is that there was this past week in Nebraska, a car was stopped going 157 miles an hour.
Wow, that's fast.
I don't know how. I'd like to know how they were able to stop a car going to 157 miles an hour.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have a couple officers involved in that, or the person willingly pulled over.
And I think they did willingly pull over. But you know, I know that we've had it's been a huge surge in speeding, particularly on the interstate. But I think you said there's a surge in speeding pretty much everywhere. Is that right?
Yeah, we have noticed that. We've noticed a lot higher speeds. Our office, we had some in excess of 100 miles per hour.
For example, if somebody's driving 100 miles an hour in a let's say 65 mile per hour zone, what is the fine for 35 miles over the speed limit?
So I don't know that exact amount because it steps up with each mile per hour.
Okay.
After 25.
Okay.
So at that point, you're going to be in the $400, $500, $600 range.
Okay. So, what's going on? Are people just they figure there's less traffic, or they figure is there any explanation you have on that?
Well, I think when the roads, when we were seeing a lot less traffic on the roads, when people were staying home a lot more, I think that kind of opened up the roads for speed, in a sense. I think people felt a little bit more able or willing to drive a lot faster down the road when there was less vehicles. So that's what was happening. Why that's carried over, I'm not certain, but we've continued to notice that. I know at least a couple deputies in the last week or two have had speeders in excess of 100, and that's not a real normal thing.
I mean, that can't be in the 55 mile an hour zone.
Both of those were 55 mile per
hour.
Oh, wow. Zones. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think. We got a lot of construction going on to the north. I guess it could be on. I'm trying to think. We've got 65 on 34, 65, except for the city. You got 65 going south down to Fort Madison out of Burlington. Yeah, it's hard for me to figure out where you could be speeding 100 miles an hour and do it and not be on a two-lane road.
Yeah, we're when you reach those speeds, you're definitely nowhere near safe. And I would just, I guess, put out there is when you exceed the speed limit by that much, no doubt you're going to lose your license and have a very large fine. So just watch that speed. It's speed is just a huge contributor to deaths and traffic accidents. And
well, let's talk about we're talking about the virus now again, and what sort of things. Okay, speeding, as we've attributed speeding, the virus seems to accelerate it as you've been locked down in a lockdown situation, less traffic, more speeders. As a lockdown situation, my understanding is more domestic violence. Does that go hand in hand as well?
Yeah, you know, remembering back to those first several weeks, 4 to 5 weeks, I feel like everybody was in this together. When everybody was really penned up and staying at home, our call load went down significantly, and people really reacted well. They were getting along, they were doing their best. But as those weeks wore on, we did notice a definite increase in family arguments, domestic violence. Disputes in general, where people, I think, had just reached their breaking point and weren't able to get along anymore when they were in small households. Not everybody has a lot of room at their home or room to get outside to play in the yard, and that can be a very difficult situation. If you put a family of 3, 4, 5, 6 people into a 2-bedroom home, that can be hard on them.
Domestic violence is probably one of the most challenging, isn't it? One of the most challenging calls you get.
It can be very difficult. We're trying to come into a situation that develop an understanding of from both parties of what's going on. And while we're talking with them, they're also very they're agitated. They're upset. Something's occurred that's caused them to not be able to reach common ground on their own. So somebody's called 911 or called the public safety line and requested our assistance. A lot of times that's a neighbor that's overheard something or seen something. But we're trying to talk with them and reach common ground, and it's not always that easy.
It's a more complicated. It's not a simple call. It's sort of like there's no routine traffic stop anymore either.
No, and even more so for those kind of incidents, because typically they're upset with each other, but very quickly they'll come to each other's defense, and things change rapidly, and there's certainly no routine domestic violence or family dispute type call.
All right, we're talking about any of the other things that are going on. In terms of one of the things we've mentioned before, Mike many years ago told me, he said, I said, what's the difference between now and when you were first a young officer? And he said, we got a call. There was a fight at a bar. We were pretty well sure that, you know, maybe somebody was hitting somebody over the head with a pool cue or maybe a fist fight. He said, now you can be pretty well, at least you have to expect somebody's pulling a gun out. And is that the case right now? Are guns just a lot more available right now, or illegal guns, or guns unregistered, or what's the story? How do you deal with the fact that you're going to be dealing with firearms?
There's certainly a lot of illegal guns that are present, and I would say over the last couple of years we've our community's dealt with some of these gun violence issues, but I'll put out there that I really think we've begun to turn the corner on this. Our local law enforcement agencies, Burlington, West Burlington, the sheriff's office, we've worked really hard on some proactive patrols, on identifying those that are engaged in this violent, illegal activity. And we work hard to create an environment that's not cohesive for
them.
It's
been said that guns and drugs go together. Is it true?
Yes, it is. People that are willing to sell and deal drugs, they're also very willing to carry guns. It's a violent business, and there's rivals, there's territories. It's the business that they engage themselves in is very dangerous, and if they're not carrying a gun, their opposition likely is.
We used to have it was said at one time we had. A surge. If there was a surge, it was a surge in meth, in home meth operations. Is that still the case?
No, we see that still at times, but not at all like it was 10, 15 years ago. Even probably 5 or 6 years ago, if I'm getting the timeline right. But what really has changed with methamphetamine, what we're seeing is it's not produced locally. It's transported in. It's brought in very large quantities. We saw the one pot methods where we were seeing the anhydrous thefts years ago. That used to be one of our tactics where we'd watch the stores for what was being sold, the pseudoephedrine or ephedrine based products, lithium and anhydrous.
You're saying that's not the case right now, or not primarily the case.
It's not primarily the case. We still see a little bit of that.
Where is it coming from? Where is the meth coming from?
Well, I believe a lot of the large amounts of methamphetamine are produced in Mexico.
Okay.
And they're brought in, and they come here in large quantities.
Wow. How large of a quantity are we talking about?
Pounds, which was years ago was not normal for us to see, and then over the last couple years we've executed search warrants, we've done narcotics investigations where we've begun to see pounds, and initially that was very unusual, where we'd see a pound or two of ice or methamphetamine, and that was striking to us, and then it became almost the norm that we'd see that.
We're going to take a break. We've got Sergeant Kevin Glendening with us from the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office on Peace Officer Day. We'll be back right after this.
Friday night is football night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. This Friday, join Scott Mason and John Flaherty as Burlington travels to Devonport North. Brought to you by Rhinesmith's Flooring America, Bob Dodds Insurance, Kirk Massner Family Dentistry, Pizza Wrench, the Danville State Savings Bank, Courtesy Door, Ritter's Garden Center, and Standard of Beaverdale. BHS Football, 7 p.m. Friday night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and KBUR.com.
For ways to stay in front of their customers. Have you thought about the number of additional impressions you could make on potential customers just by putting your business name on your car? Hi, this is Tyler Sherwood with the Sherwood Company. Adding a sign to your company or personal vehicle allows you to have a rolling ad for your business all year long. From a full-color wrap to a simple logo on the door, Sherwood Company's professional designers and installers have you covered. Maybe you yourself have seen some of the rolling ads professionally installed by the Sherwood Company. The Furniture Store, Standard of Beaverdale, Mediapolis Telephone Company, and Schottenkirk all have trusted the Sherwood Company to bring their brand identity onto the open road. Using this same technology, Sherwood Company can wrap almost anything you can think of. We've wrapped a pool table and even a prosthetic leg. Have an idea of something cool you want to do? Give us a call at the Sherwood Company.
First impression last. Time to call Sherwood Company.
Do you worry too much or not enough about securing your network, website, email, and backing up your data? Hi, this is Mary Beth at JNS Electronic Business Systems. We custom build managed IT solutions, which can include the flexible, resilient cloud services you need. Live worry-free in the cloud so you can focus on what drives the success of your business. It's what we do for you. For service you can rely on, call us or visit us at jselectronics.com.
It may just be your lucky day. Come out and play at Catfish Bend Casino during the Luck of the Draw promotion going on now. One entry from every 50 points earned on your Players Club card. Each Friday and Saturday in September at 7 and 8 p.m., three winners will be picked to draw a poker hand. Make up your hand of five cards from a deck of 20 cards. All 10s are aces. You could win up to $1,500 cash or a free play prize of $100 to $1,000. See Player Services for details. Come out and play and live lucky at Catfish Bend Casino.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were eight and you had bad treats, you thought to swim.
Just talking about Eddie Marsh, who was a... Eddie was a... longtime member of the panel, longtime member of Burlington's Police Department, wrote an awful lot of seatbelt violations. He was the seatbelt king of Southeast Iowa. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. Who do we have with us today? And we do not have. Okay, apparently not. Apparently somebody else might have been calling in for another reason, but that's another story. Kevin Glendening is with us. We're talking about, seatbelt violations. Do you see many seatbelt violations anymore?
Yes, we still see those. Not nearly at the rate that, say, 15, 20 years ago that we used to see. We do the Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau grant, and we do those seatbelt checks. And I can't remember the exact number that we came up with last time, but it's somewhere around 97, 98, 99%.
So we're pretty doggone high compared to maybe other places in the country, is that right?
I feel very good about our seatbelt compliance in the area. We do really good. And a lot of times what we do see is somebody that needs a warning, needs stopped and just reminded of, I get you're just driving around town, but you got to have your seatbelt on for safety.
All right. Texting while driving. How big of a problem is that?
I'd say it's one of our major problems, a major up-and-coming problem. And it's something I think we really need to concentrate on changing as a society of being off of our phones. I think people have this constant need to have a phone in their hand, whether they're regardless of what activity they're involved in, they have a phone in their hand. And even driving in a vehicle alone, we'll see people that are on their phone, that they're on social media, they're sending text messages. And I'm not referring to the people that are making a phone call or using the hands-free devices, but the people that are looking down, and we all see them. We pull up to intersections or somebody passes us or we pass somebody else and we see their eyes down instead of on the road. Things happen so quickly. And when we talk about reaction time and reactionary gaps, you need all the time that you can to be to make that reaction. So your focus needs to be up. There's a certain level of cognitive ability and thinking that you just have to have the focus there.
We're going to the phones. Good morning on the talk. Are you calling on the talk show today for Peace Officer Day?
Yeah, Peace Officer. My name is Dean. I'd like to say, basically, I think you do a good job. I think you do the best job you can do. All this about you're seeing on the news, that the problem is that they're being a wide brush, that all police are racist and they're corrupt, but most, only 1% out of 1% are bad, 99% are good.
I'd say it's probably less. I'd say maybe a tenth of 1% maybe are bad.
The problem is they don't see it on the news. They basically be a bright brush to think that all of them are that way. They aren't. But I do think that basically that we should ban a chokehold, that we should ban basically that you should have when you were going into an apartment or into the search warrant.
The no-knock warrant, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to ban that right there, right then. But do not, I beg Iowa, do not defund the police, because you look at other places that have done that, and they have more crime, more violence, and you need to train police to base, you need to fund them.
Okay, Dean,
I'm going to let you go and get
Kevin's response on this. I don't think too many places have actually ended up defunding police. There's been a lot of calls for it, but I don't really think there's been many places that have said that's happened. Am I right?
I think that's basically right. And when we talk about defunding the police, I think we need to be really cautious. And we spoke to this a little bit earlier about the call load and the need for law enforcement. Just listening to the calls or review our call logs of the incidents that we're responding to, we are busy entities. There's a large need for the police. That being said, I think I'm very open to conversations about reallocation of services, of defining or giving more resources to law enforcement. We talk about this with our mental health and disability services, with mobile crisis units, in our region we have four counties in our mental health region that they've begun mobile crisis, where they have an actual team that will respond within an hour to a mental health crisis. And I'm all for bringing in services where we have mental health professionals that are able to respond to a person that's in mental health crisis.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that kind of service continue and create services where there's mental health professionals. We try really hard. We train in crisis intervention training to deal with mental health issues and mental health crisis. But there's definitely better professionals out there that are able to respond and level out those situations.
No doubt about that. It's been a good hour. We've had Sergeant Kevin Glendenning with us. And again, we want to thank you for joining us today. We have Peace Officer Day the first Thursday of every month, and we'll see how many we get that come up the next month. I think we'll have a better crew and a better number of officers coming up. Kevin, have a great month. Okay?
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.